Okay, Eamon, thanks very much for coming and agreeing to speak to me today. I'd just like to start talking about how you got started in sports journalism and how you got involved in journalism in Glasgow. Could you tell us a little bit about how that started?
Yeah, sure. Started off, well, my sort of involvement in within the Asian media started off in 1997, when a pilot project was sort of initiated, where we would provide a radio facility for Muslims living in Glasgow, and that was the formation of Radio Ramadan, which started off during the month of Ramadan, the month of fasting. It was a pilot project for that year, so we weren't really sure where it would go, from there.
Who initiated that?
It was a group of sort of friends, including myself, who wanted to sort of branch out into the media sort of industry, so to speak, providing not just written materials or lectures or conferences, but something different. And the radio idea came about when five, six of us were just sitting down one day having a brainstorm of what we could do for the Ramadan that was only a few months away. So, as with all things in life, we hastily sort of got together and wrote a letter to the radio commission to grant us a license for 30 days for the month of Ramadan, which we were successful in getting without much involvement of community leaders or the public even. Because they saw us providing a service for the public. In this case, it was the, you know, it's, it was wasn't specifically for Muslims, but anyone can tune into a radio station and listen to what's happening. So that was how I kind of got started.
Did the six of you have much media experience before that, or was
No,
this a
no.
this is
That was the ironic thing, was that we did not have any experience with radio, TV, all that kind of technology sort of stuff. We had one technician, electrical technician, who was into like photography and all that kind of stuff. So he was into all his computers. So he kind of had a, I think, Windows Media Player on the PC at home was his sort of expertise. So he kind of guided us sort of towards the right direction. So we set up camp in Tradeston in an old disused warehouse, and that was the birth of Radio Ramadan in Glasgow and my
And how
sort
did how
of
did you find that
experience.
how did you find that place?
The
The warehouse.
well, it was all we could get in such short notice.
So you're looking at adverts in papers, was that the way that it worked, or
Well,
somebody
it
knew
was
somebody?
actually the other kind of twist in the tale was it just happened to be my uncle's sort of extension of his current warehouse that he had at the time. And it was being disused, so it was like a big, massive empty floor space, really. So we set up partitions, and then we had one room where, the presenters were working live on air. One room for like production, post-production, pre-production of,
And how did you finance this? Was this through grants or through the community or?
Well, we all kind of chipped in to start off with, and then we all started to approach businesses, local businesses, about advertising on the air,
Course,
which is one of the sort of the main financial means of income. So so slowly word of mouth got around, and we started to get a bit more organized, and money wasn't available much at the time, so it was little streams coming through sponsorship, advertising, etc. And we produced like a timetable, a prayer timetable with the Radio Ramadan logo, all that kind of stuff, and then it really basically just kind of flew from there.
And what kind of programming did you provide within that 30 days? I mean, was it largely talk, or was there music, or?
Well, we tried to keep it according to Islamic law, so which the Islamic law forbids any kind of music other than the there's certain. I'm not a scholar, so forgive me for being ignorant, but there are some specific types of music which are disallowed, forbidden. So we tried to keep it so that everyone was happy, because we didn't want complaints coming from like scholars from abroad or from down south saying, well, this is forbidden, you're blaspheming basically your own
Did you take
religion.
advice locally for
We
that?
did, yeah, we did take advice on what we should be doing. We consulted with the imams of Glasgow Central Mosque, who are probably the most learned scholars available in Glasgow for the Muslim community. So we did approach them, got their advice and took the advice on board. And basically our timetable throughout the 30 days was according to their advice plus what we thought the community needed. For example, we didn't just have lectures, we didn't have, you know, we didn't just play a recording of a lecture from some guy from, you know, America or Pakistan. It was structured so there was somebody live on air. Don't forget, this was only a pilot, you know, sort of a 30-day to see how things went. So it was really play by ear. We tried to provide an eclectic mix of programming. For example, there was, I think, from 12 o'clock to 2 o'clock, when most women were at home, we had like a program for them in Urdu. And then we also had during the fast break, which was sunrise, and then the fast when you keep your fast in the morning before the dawn prayers, we had live programming. So somebody was on air live talking about, you know, the day ahead, the good deeds you should be doing, recitations.
That's the fire alarm. Okay, before we were rudely interrupted by the fire alarm there, but the test seems to be over now, so there was a slight interruption to our discussion. Yeah, you were telling me about the mix of programming in the first month of Radio Ramadan. One of the questions I was going to ask you was, you said specifically in the afternoon you were targeting towards women who might be at home and the programmes were in Urdu. Do you remember any discussion about a kind of language policy or how you would... Did you deliberately mix languages, English and Urdu?
Yeah, we mixed them so that we could obviously reach out to a wider audience. Not many people had really kind of, by the end of the first week, not many people had really known that, you know, we had Radio Ramadan was live on air and you could tune in on 105.4 FM, etc. So really we were trying to get sort of word of mouth and just tell our friends and families to pass the word around. And obviously there's a lot of non-English speaking, particularly women, living, you know, amongst the Muslim population in Glasgow. So we tried to obviously change the timetable so that we could get English, Arabic, Urdu, and even some cases Gujarati shows or slots onto the daily timetable. That way we could reach across to a wider audience.
What kind of Arabic? Would this be kind of classical Arabic related to the Quran or?
Well, no, it'll be modern day Arabic. It'll be like an Arabic presenter, male or female, coming on air and maybe talking about issues in the Arabic world, for example, discussions. There wasn't any specificity as far as, you know, music was concerned or lectures. I mean, most of them were in English anyway. And the music were was in Arabic, so which was understandable by all. So we tried to obviously. It's difficult to explain because it was really kind of higgledy-piggledy at start. So we had it so that at certain times we could target, like for example, the Urdu-speaking population, which will be like the afternoon slot. Then when it's time to break the fast, which will be around about the sunset, we had all programs in English because then we thought, you know, most people will be listening. Listening to the radio to so that they know it's time to break the fast and they can eat, etc. So most of them will be, you know, those programs were in English, and then the Arabic would we have maybe say after the night prayers for about 9-10 o'clock, because we thought maybe that's when most of the Arabic population would be listening.
To your knowledge, was this the first radio program in Glasgow that was serving the kind of the ethnic community?
Yes, yes. As far as we were concerned, we'd obviously done our homework and research beforehand, and there was no other. Well, there hadn't been any other radio or sort of media outlet available for, you could say, the Asian or specifically in this case the Muslim community. So we thought, you know, we are the first of its kind.
Certainly the first commercial one, because I do vaguely remember kind of half-hour BBC programmes aimed at, well, certainly the Chinese community, I think the Indian-Pakistani community at some point in the past, but I mean, it's a vague and distant memory for me.
Well, the thing with Radio Ramadan was not many people would have known about the BBC Asian Network, for example, what time it came on, and I'm assuming they had programmes in English or Urdu, I'm not sure.
I think I remember Urdu programmes in Radio Scotland, but I'm going to have to go back and check that. But it was like a magazine programme, and it was in a mix of, I think, Urdu and English, but it was time limited. It was not a program that ran all year, for example.
I'd heard of them myself. They were more sort of dramas or sort of stories that they had, like a weekly story for like a 6-week block. But then again, no one knew they were on, because we'd ask people, we'd done a survey beforehand, sent out questionnaires to like local youth groups and mosques, etc. After Friday prayers, we had guys standing outside asking everyone, have you ever heard of what would you like a radio station, catering for the Muslim community in Glasgow or the Pakistani community, and what kind of programming would you like? And the feedback we were getting was that not many people knew, or as far as we were concerned, no one had known or realised that there were programmes like the BBC's or Radio Scotland. So as far as we were concerned, this was the first, so
you're
to speak.
Your ground,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
Was it a 24-hour broadcast?
It was,
because I'd imagine that a lot of activity during Ramadan is during the night.
It is.
That's when you eat.
Yeah, we had. That's the main time. That's the best time, actually. Yeah. We had people, like staff, based at the station. We tried to have them 24 hours a day, but again, it was because it was the first time we'd had this station going out live. We were kind of unsure about the safety of procedures and all that kind of stuff. So we did try to make sure that somebody was there overnight, because we had thousands of pounds worth of equipment, which we kind of had to buy really from scratch. Sitting there, so the main sort of focus of the day was the evening, as you said, because of
the bustle
of activity. But we had the live phone-ins and discussions during the evening, and those proved very popular, especially the first time we did the Radio Ramadan.
In the phone-ins, what languages are used? Is it English, Urdu, or a mixture?
Well, we had a presenter who could speak English, obviously, and a presenter who was fluent in Arabic and Urdu. So if a caller, for example, say an elderly woman, wanted to call in, obviously not knowing English, she could ask the question in Urdu, Punjabi, or Arabic.
All right, interesting. And how did you manage the transition from that 1 month radio program to a kind of more permanent radio station? Presumably it was successful.
Yeah, we were actually very surprised at the success we achieved. Obviously, it was we thank God for the help that He gave us. But it was a combined effort. We involved the community, which was a great benefit to the success of the station. So all the following years, we tried to, obviously we learnt our mistakes from the first year, which were many. And obviously we kept the community in touch through questionnaires, again through using newspaper, media, written media, to get their opinions and points across.
Was this a written media for the community, specifically for the community?
Yes,
These are, what, Asian newspapers?
Asian newspapers. I've brought a couple along, I can certainly let you have. So basically, we changed the programming completely over the next few years, so that we had different programs aimed at youth, specific times of the day, again aimed at women, and then we actually had more programs in Urdu and Punjabi, rather than English, because we thought the women are at home during Ramadan, they're cooking all day long, preparing for the big meal in the evening or at sunset. So, if they're in the kitchen, they can have the radio on, for the 2-3 hours or whatever it is that they're there.
Yeah.
So we had those programs specifically aimed to be majority of the programming in Urdu or in Punjabi.
So did you reapply for a license for the following year's Ramadan,
or
did you decide to extend it at that time, or did you have a couple of years of Ramadan only and then extend it?
No, we had to reapply each year.
Okay.
The rules and regulations of the licensing board were that we had to apply each year, and there was no problem in getting the license because of the success we had in the first 2-3 years, and it's been going on since the first year. So,
but is it still restricted the broadcasting to the month of Ramadan?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not. I understood that it was a kind of a longer broadcast.
No.
There's also a website.
There is a website. Yeah. I don't know if there's anything on the website at the moment, but there is a website. You can listen to the radio online, and obviously we have the timetable and the prayer times all on the website. What we didn't also had was, obviously in 1997, not many people were familiar with the nets and all that kind of stuff. So obviously then we branched out in having our own website, presenters, details, and programming, etc. And if we were to have like a famous speaker come on, because we did have a few very famous scholars, you know, for our live phone-in discussions in the evening, which again proved very popular each year. Mm. One thing we noticed was, obviously, Islam is not such a strict religion that you can't. It has to be serious all the time. So we had programming for like the kids, a show called Kids on Air, where kids, young kids from like 3-4 year old up to whatever 16-17 could phone in, recite poetry in Arabic and in Urdu or even in English, recite verses from the Quran, obviously in Arabic. So it was a chance to, you know, it was called Kids on Air, basically the program. Yeah. So again, we have that sort of blend of youth and the, you know, old.
It seems very family oriented to me.
It is. Yeah. I mean, the month of Ramadan is actually a very family oriented month. Mm-hmm. So obviously, we had to take that on board and make sure we provided for everyone.
So tell me how you get into sports journalism. You're a kind of entrepreneur. You're setting up Radio Ramadan with five other guys. Where does the sports journalism come in?
Well, I love to write. And read. I mean, that is probably my main hobby. If you ask someone what your hobby is, they probably say I collect stamps or I play football. But I've always loved to read since I was a young kid. I was always excelled English at school, and fortunately, I didn't take it up as a career. Journalism, that is. So again, we were looking at different media outlets for the Asian community this time, rather than the Muslim community, and. From experience, we'd sort of realised that many journalists were coming from abroad, for example, Pakistan and India, and even the Middle East, to set up newspapers or magazines in Britain, and they were flops. They weren't really. I mean, they had like, you know, 4 or 5 months of circulation, and then they would basically call it a day. So we wanted to provide this time specifically for the Asian community.
This was after Radio Ramadan.
This was quite recently, maybe in the last 4 years.
Okay.
About 4 years ago. So we wanted to provide a high quality newspaper, tabloid newspaper for catering for the Asian community, which had news, sport, health, lifestyle, all sort of issues relevant for people living for Asians living in Glasgow. And the newspapers that were available at the time were very sort of vague in the news and the style of reporting, a lot of mistakes, very badly edited and published, not really specific news-wise for Muslims or Asians or Indians, whatever, living in Scotland. They were all sort of news stories from like England majority, because that's where most Asians live.
Yeah.
So we set up Awaz newspaper, which means voice.
Okay.
So really, we were the voice of the Scottish Asian, so to speak. So again, as with all things, we set up quite cheap, and it was black and white the first few months of the paper. It was a monthly paper, by the way, so it wasn't like a weekly, because we didn't have the finance and the staffing to really make it a weekly publication. So it was a monthly publication. Stories were all relevant, specific to the Asian community living in Glasgow, and I just happened to, you know, offer my help to the team and said, okay, I don't mind. I mean, I love following sport, so I'll become your sports reporter. So again, it was all voluntary. There was no expenses, salary or anything for any of the staff involved. Everything is done voluntarily, so we all sort of donated our time. So that's really how I got into it.
So what's your day job?
I'm a physiotherapist.
Oh, right.
Working for the NHS. Okay. So that's my 9-to-5 job.
So everybody who's working in the newspaper and the radio are volunteers doing other things. Okay.
Yes, no one is paid at all. Uh-huh. It's all they're giving their own time for the community.
Okay.
So that's how I got into sports journalism. And I'd written a few articles previous to the WASC coming out for the Friday People, which is a sort of a newsletter stroke newspaper that comes out every Friday. So that's like a weekly publication. So, and that's aimed more towards sort of giving religious information or religious advice, religious articles, Middle East political, sort of politically
oriented. Who publishes that?
Dr. Tayan is the editor, and he publishes it.
He's Glasgow based.
He's a Glasgow based, yeah. Yeah, so. But that's really how I got into the sort of the sports side of things. Okay. Yeah.
And what sports do you cover?
All sports. Obviously, the popular ones are cricket, hockey, and football. So that's obviously what the Pakistanis Indians are really, you know, into. The, you know, as far as sports are concerned.
So do you look at international or national or local?
Everything.
Or
everything, everything. Yeah, we cover. Obviously, if Pakistan are playing, you know, the West Indies, we make sure we have all the latest news. But sometimes, because it's a monthly publication, it's difficult to kind of keep track because you don't want to publish outdated information. No. You want it to be relevant and up to date. So if something, so if our, say for example, if our pub newspaper came out on the 1st of each month, and for the 1st of January, and on the 2nd of December, the, you know, the previous month, there was a big issue, sporting news or whatever, we would think twice before publishing that because it's over, you know, 5 weeks old now. So, yeah, but the majority of our news is local, so whatever's happening at a local level, as far as sports, news, events are concerned, we try to cover those and concentrate more on them.
And which language or languages do you write in?
English and Urdu.
And
yeah,
Urdu.
It's half and half. So it won't be the, it won't necessarily be the same articles, but it'll be half the paper is in English and half the back pages are all in Urdu.
And how do you decide which language you're going to write a particular? Do you have bilingual articles or you say half the paper's in Urdu, half the paper's in English? So what makes you decide to write an article in English or Urdu?
I think that's down to the editor, really. I think we try to keep it. So that specific news, for, say for example from Pakistan, give you a good example, the recent Molly Campbell situation, we had all those news articles in Urdu because it was you know, things that were happening, say back home, for most people living in Glasgow, so they wanted to, and most of them would probably be women that would be interested. So we have to kind of really play by ear, and obviously the editor sits down with the chief reporter and says, okay, well, is this relevant? Would we, should we have this in English or Urdu? Or, you know, sports news are always in English because obviously we're trying to target the youngsters, the men, because the women aren't really interested in sport. So that's all in English. Whereas for women, we have a page on health and lifestyle, and that'll be in English and Urdu. So it'll be like two different articles. It won't necessarily be the same thing in English and then translated into Urdu. It'll be two different things, but again, catering for both sort of, you know, language-speaking communities.
Do you have consciously a kind of language maintenance policy in the newspaper? Do you see the newspaper as maintaining Urdu within the Asian communities in Glasgow?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if any research has been done in this particular field, but. I personally feel that less and less of the youth nowadays are really forgetting their mother tongue, so to speak. So that's whether it's Urdu, Punjabi, Hindi, Gujarati, wherever it happens to be. They're actually, because they're not taught it at school, and they don't converse with their friends and families in it on a daily basis.
Are they not? It's not the language of the home, or part of the language of the home?
Well, in my family, we speak with our elders in Urdu, so we would speak Urdu at home or the elders, but for my brothers and sisters, I would speak to them in English. My wife, brothers, sisters, cousins, friends, it would all be English. So speaking Urdu or Punjabi or Hindi is only sort of restricted to speak when you speak to certain people, for example, the elders.
It's cross-generational.
I mean, nowadays, you know, the kids will not speak to their best friend in, you know, in second year at school in Urdu or in Punjabi. It's just not the cool thing to do, you know. So we feel that the paper helps to keep maintain that language identity, because obviously not many kids would know how to read Urdu, never mind speak it.
There aren't community classes, because I know there are for the Chinese community.
There are
in Glasgow, on Garnet Hill, where I live.
There are actually classes that take place at the weekend. There's a weekend school which has been running now for the past 25 years in Glasgow Central Mosque. And I'm not sure like what the attendance is like, and you know, but they follow the GCSE curriculum. So it's all the English that, you know, the English schools have. So it'll be the GCSE, then the A levels in Urdu. But I think a few schools in Glasgow now are also doing Urdu as like a, I don't know whether they've changed it to standard grades, or they still call it the GCSE, but they are. And but that's only in schools where there's a high percentage of Asians.
Asians, yeah, yeah. Do you know whether the newspaper is actually used in those classes as kind of reading text?
I don't think so. No, the text that we have is very similar to a text that the papers in Pakistan or India would use. Mm-hmm. So it's quite strict. Sometimes difficult to understand, kind of Urdu. Uh-huh. And I don't know if there's a word to describe that, but it's not your standard.
It's kind of literary.
Yeah, it's like
language. It's not so much a spoken Urdu.
No. It's more the literary Urdu, so it's like there'll be words which, you know, some of the elders might not even understand, you know, okay, what they mean, but they'll know from reading the paragraph or the text. So
why do you use that? If it's more literary and more difficult to understand, why don't you adopt something that is more colloquial in style?
I think it's easier from the reporting side of things, and it's easier from like actually editing the paper side of things as well, because we felt that we have to obviously keep pure Urdu is actually very hard to understand. Uh-huh. And hard to speak. Uh-huh. And very few people can actually understand pure Urdu, the Urdu that they spoke, say, you know, before partition of Pakistan. It's like a different dialect. Mm-hmm. There's different technique. There's different words. I mean, there'll be 2, 3, 4 different words, for one thing, mm-hmm. Depending on where you were from in Pakistan, mm-hmm. for example. So mm-hmm. there's different dialects. So the Urdu that we use in the paper is like sort of the international standard for Urdu publishing type Urdu. Okay. So mm-hmm. so we use that so that we're keeping the core Urdu.
Yeah.
In the community alive.
So you're conforming to an international standard.
Yeah, and obviously that as well. So we're trying to kill two birds with one stone. But I mean, I think your idea is it might happen in the future, where because obviously, like I said, we feel less and less young, the youth are not really interested in speaking their mother languages anymore. Mm. So I think maybe if we were to adapt so that it's more, you know,
closer to the actual speech. I'm just interested in the way that language kind of historically evolved like mm-hmm. this, and that's often the pattern, not always the pattern, but often the pattern that you find. Do you find that it's very much what we call in kind of social linguistics code mixing, that you switch between Urdu and English in your texts? I imagine people do in their speech, but I just wondered whether you do in your articles.
In text, obviously if there's words which are a standard English, uh-huh. and they'll be spoken the same way in Urdu, they'll be written in English. Okay. So you would say that word in English. Mm-hmm. For example, if you're saying a name of a town, mm-hmm. or a city or someone's name, you can do it in both. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really make much difference.
Would you have a technical concept in cricket that you would just adopt into Urdu? You'd be writing in English, mind you, wouldn't you? Yeah. So that wouldn't work. Would you find yourself using an Urdu word, kind of an evaluative word, in an English cricket text? Would you ever use an Urdu word in English cricket reporting?
An English word in Urdu?
An Urdu word in an English text. If you're reporting in a cricket mm-hmm. match and you want to say something is kind of particularly and give an evaluative word.
I don't think we would.
No, you wouldn't. You'd keep the kind of linguistic boundaries fairly.
Yeah, we would keep that. I mean, in sports reporting, you have to keep that boundary. Uh-huh. Otherwise, you're not really professional. Uh-huh. In my opinion, that's uh-huh. my personal opinion. So we wouldn't code switch as such uh-huh. when we're writing text. Uh-huh. Speaking, yes, I mean uh-huh. everyone does it.
Yeah.
In speech, but in sort of written text, no, we wouldn't. It would be either or, uh-huh. depending on, like I said, if it's uh-huh. a name uh-huh. of a country or city or a person's name, then you'd just uh-huh. have it in English. But uh-huh. Other than that, no, we would uh-huh. keep them separate.
Is a newspaper very Glasgow-based, or do you reach to the Scottish Asian community outside Glasgow?
It's based in Glasgow, so most of the stories would be Glasgow-specific. Mm-hmm. But the paper is distributed in Edinburgh, Dundee, and I think Aberdeen as well. Mm-hmm. So we have the sort of the East Coast, so we would have articles specific to like someone living in Edinburgh or Dundee, etc.
Okay. So you have contributors, perhaps, from those places.
But everything is specific. Most of the articles, probably 90%, or 95% are specific to Glasgow, like the local news, events, etc.
Mm-hmm. I just wondered if you're aware of any Glasgow dialect creeping into the text at any point, particularly in sports reporting, which can, in Scottish newspapers, and I'm thinking of newspapers like the Sunday Post, you find quite a lot of dialect and kind of colloquial terms creeping mm-hmm. in there. Is it something you resist or something you adopt?
Resist. Yeah, we try to keep it as simple as possible. So I mean, if there's like, for example, if I'm reporting on like, say, I don't know, a football festival in Edinburgh, I wouldn't change my text, or the way I write my text, or the way I write my article. I wouldn't change it if I was doing the covering, say, the same event in Glasgow. You know, I would keep it the same, probably because I wouldn't know how to do it.
Okay.
It's probably the main reason.
How do you see the, I suppose it's a little bit kind of exaggerated to call it a media empire. But it's, I mean, it started off, it's very interesting. It's starting off with your weekly radio station, then you're evolving into a monthly newspaper and a website. I mean, do you see it expanding in its operations, or do you think it's got about as far as it can?
Well, what was the original concept was to have a newspaper and a radio station complement each other, so by the same name. And there was Radio Awaz, which kind of was born maybe about the same time as the paper, so about 4 or 5 years ago. And basically, that was the Awaz media empire, so to speak. Yeah. But then obviously due to, I don't know what happened, but copyright issues and all that kind of stuff, we had to make both media outlets separate.
Okay.
I think this was due to the licensing board for the radio station.
Okay.
So Radio Awaz, I'll just give you a quick kind of a quick history of that, was aimed at the Asian community, and it was a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week, 365-days-a-year station.
Okay. Right.
So it was a much bigger long-term project. I wasn't involved in that at all, but this is from what I know. And then the paper was sort of a complementary media outlet for the radio station.
Okay.
But then because of copyright issues and because basically the staff on the radio station were now getting paid for presenting, and they were on salaries.
So were these the same people that started off? No, so it's completely separate from Radio Ramadan.
Separate group altogether, yeah. The Radio Ramadan group was more, as like I said, a couple of guys got together and sort of provided something for the Muslim community, whereas this was on a bigger scale, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week throughout the year.
Broadcasting throughout Scotland or within Glasgow?
Well, it's available, I think, as far as up north as Stirling.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Central Belt. Yeah.
Central Belt, yeah. Not Edinburgh. So, again, it's confined to Glasgow because that's where Scotland's, you know, largest chunk of the Asian population stay. So that became separate, a separate sort of organisation altogether with paid presenters, paid members of staff, and they've got their own base and everything. So the newspaper had to kind of cut away from that because we were voluntary and they wanted to, you know, go their own way. So obviously, again, the party split into two. So that was provided, like, you know, as an alternative to Radio Ramadan. I mean, it comes on during Ramadan as well, the Radio Awaz. But again, the Radio Awaz is more sort of cultural, rather than religious, and more traditional in its sort of thoughts and programming and etc. So there's more music, more Bollywood music, you know. Film, Bollywood film music and Pakistani music, and then on Fridays they have like a slot where it's sort of religious content involved. So that was more geared towards trying to sort of recreate or the cultural Pakistani and Indian cultural sort of traditions in people and provide a service for them. Whereas obviously Radio Ramadan was on a completely different scale.
That's interesting. Has it survived?
It's still going. I think 2 years ago we were given, the Radio Awaz was given a license to broadcast for the next 5 years.
Okay.
So in 3 years' time they'll have to reapply for another 5-year license, which I don't think they'll have a problem with getting. So basically Radio Awaz is here to stay.
That's good, but so that gives Radio Ramadan competition during the month of...
Not really.
No?
No, because we're on a completely different scale and we're catering for a completely different community.
Okay.
Whereas more Indians would listen to the Radio Awaz than they would to Radio Ramadan for obvious reasons.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So again, it's a completely different ballgame.
Yeah.
Where, I suppose both are doing their thing for the community and they're providing different services, let's say, you know, their own communities, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you see it developing further? Do you see the newspaper side of it developing?
I think the only restrictions we would have in the newspaper developing would be manpower,
uh-huh.
staffing, and finance.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the only sort of income that the paper receives is through advertisements
uh-huh.
in the paper. There's set prices if you want a full page, half page, etc. Set prices for that. So that's really the only income we're getting.
Uh-huh.
And
We're restricted by that.
Whereas I see the radio station, there's potential there for it to grow.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And obviously, with the mainstreaming success of Bollywood movies, presumably you have a crossover listenership as well.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, anyone nowadays, everyone's watching, you know, the big Bollywood blockbuster films, and from the young kid to the elder. So.
Yeah.
The radio wise is really doing, you know, its best, is trying to cater for them. So and if there's any sort of local musical events which are happening all the time for the Asian community, you know, they're all advertised, so people know what's going on. And again, it's in three different languages, so it's in English, Punjabi, and Urdu.
Do you have local writers featured? Because I know that there are I've heard that there are local writers who are writing in Urdu, particularly, who are published in Pakistan, but only kind of filter back to Scotland through translation, which happens in London. I hear about this, but I don't know very many details. And I just wondered if there's a kind of community out there which I'm just not aware of.
For the paper, you mean?
No, for the radio or for the paper, yeah.
Well, for the radio, we have the sketches, sort of like a sketch show for radio was where, there's programs that are available in, say, Pakistani uh-huh. radio back home in Pakistan, or even India.
Uh-huh. So you import sketches?
Yeah, so they're imported over, and then they're played.
Uh-huh. Do you have any kind of attempt to involve local writers in home-produced sketches? Or?
Well, there's very few going around, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I just wondered whether there was a role for fostering that kind of activity or not.
I think that's where it could possibly grow.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I know of two of the presenters also present on the BBC Scotland Asian, their Asian station or Asian slot, uh-huh. which I think on a Sunday afternoon. Excuse me. So these are qualified,
uh-huh.
Professional presenters who uh-huh. are working, who have studied journalism or media studies or mm-hmm. whatever it happens to be, and they're now using the radio to kind of pursue their careers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great.